From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all the right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Joan Rivers is the subject of a new documentary. We talk with the comedy icon about swimming with Hollywood sharks, coming back from the brink of oblivion, and yes, even the plastic surgery. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, June gloom, more than just a weather description.
This is the time of the year when the movie studios are usually enjoying the riches of their summer movie slate. The bunnies rolling in, everything looks good, and yet it's quite the opposite right now. We've had a string of underachieving movies. Last weekend it was Killers and Get 'Em to the Greek and Marmaduke, and there are a lot of big movies on the horizon. We have yet to know exactly how A-Team and Karate Kid will play out, but I think what I'm hearing, I suspect what you're hearing, is nobody knows what's going wrong.
Yeah, I don't know that they ever know what has gone wrong, but the formulas aren't working. And of course, it could be those staggering ticket prices. It could be the lack of originality. Everything seems like such a retread. I mean, whatever happens with A-Team and Karate Kid, haven't we heard those titles before, like 20 years ago, 30 years
no,
ago?
I will throw one more thing into the mix. If you want to go see Marmaduke, you could probably see a better version of that on Nickelodeon for free. So it's not just cable TV, it's broadcast television. There are a lot of options out there, and some of them, if you look at some of the movies coming out, are better. And I think there are a number of huge question marks on the horizon too. Fox has Night and Day, which is the Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz action movie. It cost more than $100 million, and the early audience tracking surveys are really worrisome. They don't show that anybody under age 25 is fervently interested in going to see that movie. So even though some movies have underachieved so far, I think there's still some movies in the next couple of weeks that could be real problems.
Yeah, a lot of people I know are sounding very depressed. And, you know, Night and Day was supposed to be the Tom Cruise comeback vehicle, really carefully chosen to get him away from being considered strange, you know, a couch jumper, a Matt Lauer insulter, and to being a movie star again. Now, of course, he's not getting any younger. I think he's made a heck of an effort to young up his image. We've seen him do the Les Grossman bit, first in Tropic Thunder and more recently on the MTV Awards. And it's quite popular, isn't it, John?
It's so popular it's going to be a movie. But maybe that's exactly what's going wrong, is that you say, Les Grossman, interesting character, let's make a movie out of it.
A-Team,
beloved TV show,
it?
Let's make a movie out of it. I still think this cycle is going to run its course, that that the audience, if what's happening in the summer is indicative of not just, like, you know, specific movies having problems, but the audience is saying, we've seen, been there, done that, that those kinds of movies are not going to get made.
Well, you know, and we have seen with Avatar that something that feels a little different can make a lot of money. So
no, and also I will say this now, that the movie Chris Nolan's Inception could be the one movie. It's a Warner Brothers movie that's coming out later this summer. That could show exactly what Avatar showed over Christmas, that if you have a great, talented director doing an original story, audiences will come. If Inception doesn't work, I think Hollywood's really, the panic is going to go much worse.
It's going to be audible in the
It's going to go to 11.
Boulevard. Yeah. Now, one of the movies that didn't do well last weekend was Killers with Ashton Kutcher and I've already forgotten who the female star.
Katherine Heigl.
Thank you. Katherine Heigl, and not launching her film career too well. It did not do well. Most expensive movie ever from Lionsgate, and that's going to make it hard to fend off their long-term suitor, Carl Icahn, I would assume.
This is, what Lionsgate really needed at a time when Carl Icahn is trying to take over control of the company, trying to buy the company, is some hits at the box office. So to have their most expensive production not do well is one piece of bad news. And now Mark Cuban has suggested that he is probably going to tender his shares in Lionsgate to Icahn. Cuban owns about 5.5% of Lionsgate stock. And when you couple that with Icahn's holding, it's going to start making this, what has been kind of a long, drawn-out soap opera, get a lot more interesting very quickly.
Yeah, who knows what Cuban has in mind. He's a guy who's in favor of all sorts of different models of how to release movies. I can't say that he's done any that I really can even call up as, yeah, that was a good one. But he has a lot of ideas, and he's a bit of a gadfly, and he may put Carl Icahn at the tipping point to acquire Lionsgate. That is one of several Hollywood properties in play. The others, MGM and Miramax, are going begging for buyers. I find it amazing that Disney has entered an exclusive negotiating period with David Bergstein and his partner Ron Tudor. Bergstein mired in legal difficulties here.
Yeah, there's probably more lawsuits against David Bergstein than there is against BP right now. I mean, he's a litigation magnate.
He is
keeping a lot of lawyers fully employed.
Just, one problem after another. And it's amazing to me that it's come to this, that they're – I wouldn't have imagined at the beginning. I thought they would – why bother negotiating with this guy? But one deal after another has fallen through. And who knows? They may sort of figure, nail down, get that money into an account and say, fine, here, take it. It's dark times in the movie business.
No, if David Bergstein is your best customer, then I think it shows that, A, there's probably not a lot of buyers out there, and B, you're probably desperate to get rid of Miramax, which I think is equally true for that story.
And that's all the banter that's fit to broadcast. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Once you've become a star, the trick is to remain a star. Actors are uncomfortably aware that it's possible to go from hot to cold in less time than it takes to melt an ice cube. If that happens, they can fade away or they can set about the difficult task of reinventing themselves. No one works harder at that than Joan Rivers. At age 77, this industry veteran is relentless about holding on to a place in the spotlight. In the new documentary, Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, filmmakers Annie Sundberg and Ricky Stern document a year in her life, showing the exhausting pace she maintains just to remain in the game. We see her perform in an autobiographical play, which she takes to Britain. That's her passion project. But we also see her negotiate for gigs on cruise ships and working in a remote Midwestern comedy club, complete with heckler. She submits to a roast on Comedy Central, and she jumps at the chance to do Celebrity Apprentice. The documentary also touches on Rivers' relationship with her daughter, Melissa, who often works with her mother and went mano a mano with her on Celebrity Apprentice.
Everyone's like, oh, what was it like living with a legend? I'm like, yeah, it was hilarious when I was getting grounded, which is why I always say to people, it's like you don't realize how in these very extraordinary, abnormal circumstances, what a normal world my parents created. And that's a testament to them. It's funny because she refers to her career as the career, and it dawned on me one day that I had a sibling. We all work on the career as if it's a totally separate entity in the room.
What was your role vis-a-vis this film?
A non-participating role in the sense that I had absolutely nothing to do with the content or the arc of the story, whatever they wanted to do. I just was a subject. And in a way, it was very refreshing. I never worried.
The message that comes through loud and clear is that you say it again and again, you'll do anything. You'll open an envelope. You don't care. You're not interested in retiring or even slowing down.
No. Why? I love what I do. Why slow down?
I don't know. I mean, I was exhausted watching you.
But I love the business. It's all I wanted to do from the time I could put two ideas together. And I'm still doing it? How lucky is this?
Do you know how to do anything else? Would you know how to do anything else?
Probably not at this point.
No?
Probably not. Except I did Celebrity Apprentice, and I turned out to be a great concierge.
Who knew, right? It could have been a whole different life. Yes, you won Celebrity Apprentice. Like, you were doing it with your daughter, which you were very nervous about. You were competing with your daughter.
Yeah, I did it finally. I didn't want to do it. And I adore Donald Trump. Let me just jump to the ending. Anyone that thinks Donald Trump's an idiot is an idiot. He is so smart. He knows what he's doing, and he does it impeccably. So I didn't want to do the show because I didn't know how smart Donald was. Now it's a love fest between us. And I finally did it because they said, what if you and Melissa go on together, which was a brilliant idea, mother and daughter competing. And she lived at home for a month. So it was great. And then I was worried that competing with her, you don't want to win out over her. I'm not here to show, oh, look, mommy's smarter than the daughter. Not that I am, but, you know, I don't want it to be perceived. And so that was a big decision. But we had such a good time. And she was 11th to be fired.
So she hung in there pretty good.
She sure hung in there fine.
But you won.
But I won.
Did you get benefit from that?
Oh, tremendous benefit. It was 2 hours every Sunday night on NBC.
Yeah.
Amazing. Three-hour finale. 3 hours on NBC.
Of course, you say on NBC.
On NBC.
Not the highest rated network, but I take your point.
A lot bigger than We and E and TV Land and TV Guide. And
right.
Take all the channel networks, put them together, and you've got poor, pathetic NBC in third place. Huge.
Right.
Huge.
Still big.
And it's a year since I won Celebrity Apprentice. People still stop me in airports. And they don't say, I love How'd You Get So Rich, or I'm looking forward to you on E! Doing Fashion Police. They say, I was rooting for you on Celebrity Apprentice. It's extraordinarily important.
Now, you agreed to be roasted on Comedy Central, and then in the movie, you sort of kvetch about, you don't want to do
it.
It's going to be plastic surgery jokes.
Plastic surgery and age. You know that's going to be the joke.
So why'd you do it?
A money. And then once I did it was terrific. The money, hey, we're all working. I have a lot of people that I support. They have a scene in the movie where I'm signing my checks. Mm. I have three assistants. Plus, we all forget QVC. I have 18 people working for me on my QVC jewelry company that goes out. Checks go out every week, every week, every week. The money was extraordinary. And once I started to do it, I love challenges. And I said, I know they're all going to roast me. I got to come back better than what they've said because I'm the last one up. And it worked out very well. It worked out. God was good that afternoon. And my rebuttal was very strong.
Now, knowing that they were going to be all these plastic surgery jokes, of course, I have to ask you as well. I mean, is it necessary to do that? Was it a mistake? Would you do it all over again? Do women have to?
Plastic surgery is about you feeling good about yourself. I totally believe in it. If it makes you feel good and you can walk into a room with more confidence, do it.
So you had
stupid
it was nothing
not
to do
it.
With staying viable in the business, or you felt more viable?
Oh. Of course, but you feel more viable. I walk into a room now, and two-thirds of the executives are 29. I have a girl today with me from IFC who is adorable. I said, how old are you? 31. And you go, 31? 31?
Yes.
If I say Nixon, you know what I'm talking about. Hands up, please. So I feel better. I just feel better. I was 77. A few days ago was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I like to look at... Ugh, please. Thank
Sorry.
You. I like to look in the mirror and say, for your age, you look just fine. That's all.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Joan Rivers. She's the subject of a new documentary, Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, which chronicles a year in the life of the now 77-year-old comedian. In the film, she talks about the moment in her career that could have been her crowning glory, but ended up being a source of tragedy. After years as the regular guest host on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, Rivers scored a huge deal in 1986 when the brand new Fox Network gave her a late-night talk show of her own.
The first person I called was Johnny Carson. He slammed the phone down, called him again, slammed it down again, and never spoke to me again, ever. I think he was furious. He felt betrayed. I was now a competitor. He literally had me blacklisted. And to this day, I have not been on NBC late night ever.
But Rivers says the Fox bosses soon demanded that she fire her husband, Edgar, as the producer of the show due to personality clashes.
It was all personal. Edgar took on Barry Diller and Rupert Murdoch.
Now let me just step in, and for those who may have been in, not in the entertainment
not
loop.
Not born yet.
Edgar was your husband, obviously.
Yes.
Barry Diller was running Fox. Rupert Murdoch was the owner. So,
owner.
And it was a big deal. I mean, it was a big spend and a big splash at the time when they announced
right?
this show.
And we put them on the map. With all due respect to everybody, I have now put on the map, which does make me laugh. I put Fox on the map. I put E! On the map. I am now putting TV Guide on the map with my How'd You Get So Rich. So I think new stations should hire me.
Absolutely. We're in favor of that.
I really believe this. Melissa, I have a new show on We in December. You're going to be hearing about We suddenly.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Rupert and Barry, though. Two personalities that fascinate me.
They were very smart. They were businessmen. They knew exactly what they were doing. And they hired me to do a new show. And Edgar wanted it to be, my husband was a perfectionist, and he wanted it to be perfect, and he thought he could buck these two. And early on, long before we went on the air, Barry Diller turned to me and said, the tail doesn't wag the dog.
Mm.
And
not that dog,
those,
that's for sure.
Not yeah. that dog. And Edgar, who was very smart, went to Cambridge. He went to rugby and to Cambridge. He was English. He was another breed. He wasn't a California shark. He was an English gent. So, and he just thought he was going to buck them, and he didn't. And they came to me on a Thursday, about 6 months in to the show, and they said, you can stay, but your husband has to go. And it wasn't a Sophie's choice. I said, then I go. And I was off the next day.
Wow, fast.
Yeah, that was fast. And they ran a tape on that Friday that if I said one thing that wasn't right, they would cut me off and put the tape on.
Mm.
Tough, tough times. And Edgar committed suicide over the whole thing. And it was very tough.
So was the show
worse.
Too... Sorry, go ahead.
No, it was about Edgar versus Diller and Murdoch. And that was almost worse than they had said to me, you failed. That's fine. But to hear it was nothing to do with failure, because that put me into a tailspin to my career.
You mean losing that
tough
show?
Times.
You were perceived as a failure.
Totally perceived as a failure.
Mm-hmm. And with, I mean, was it because he was a British gentleman, as you describe him? Was it too?
Who knows? You know, you get into bed with sharks, you better be a shark.
Yeah.
The show was perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing wrong. They said, as I said, it was nothing to do with what was on the air. Nothing to do with what was on the air. And you got to remember, Fox in those days was seven stations.
Yes, it was just launching, of course.
Just launching, and we put it on the map.
How did you emerge? Did you just have to do anything?
Anything, and the office dried up. Vegas dried up. People would say, nobody wants to see a comedian because her husband committed suicide. All that kind of stuff started. My agents couldn't get me work, so they disappeared. Things just evolved. And it was a very rough time. I finally said, I'm going back to New York, which was probably the smartest move I ever made, because to sit in California and not be on the A-list, quote-unquote, get out of there. Just get out of there as quickly as you can, which is what I did. Came back to New York, where people are rough and tough and angry and bleh, and I fit right in.
In New York?
In New York.
And what was the key to reversing the slide there?
Doing anything. Finally going and begging Neil Simon to put me in as a replacement to Linda Lavin on Broadway Bound.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed, and somebody from Tribune came to see me, the Tribune Company, and they wanted to do a daytime talk show, and they couldn't get Nell Carter, literally. And they said, do you want to do it? Nell doesn't want to. And that started me going again.
Coming up after a short break, more with Joan Rivers. She's the subject of a new documentary, Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. Do you think Joan's an icon or a woman who doesn't know when to quit? Tell us on the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. These days, Joan Rivers may be best known for her off-color humor, for working the red carpet at awards shows, and for her love of plastic surgery. But in the new documentary, Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, filmmakers Annie Sundberg and Ricky Stern reveal a woman who is an amazingly resilient industry pro, so committed to work that she won't let up, even at the age of 77. I'm a little younger than that, and I was exhausted just watching her go.
Nobody can stand in the rain longer than Joan Rivers. She will stay there. She's the last person standing. She'll let it rain. She'll let it rain. She'll let it rain because she knows lightning can hit because it's hit her more than once. But she knows you have to stay out in the rain, and she did.
Joan Rivers has survived many ups and downs in this business. The deepest low came after her late-night talk show on Fox failed and her husband committed suicide. Many in her Hollywood set dropped her after that, but she battled back. I don't want to date you, or certainly not myself, but we actually met once when you did a one-night thing in Beverly Hills. And Bernie Brillstein came.
Bernie Brillstein, yes.
And I mentioned to you when we met that he was there, and I was struck by how, you know, and let me just identify Bernie Brillstein for those listeners who, as you say, may not have been born. He was an absolutely legendary manager of comedy talent. All of the Saturday Night Live, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, I think, all of them.
Yeah, and who dropped me right after I was fired from Fox.
And who dropped, I was going to ask
yes.
you. Because
yes,
Bernie was, to me, more of a mensch than a lot of people in Hollywood, but he
was
too.
A mensch, but he was also a shark.
Interesting.
The minute I was fired from Fox, couldn't get Bernie on the phone.
Because he attributed his career to being nice, but apparently not always. And yet,
you know, who cares?
Well, I want to ask you, when I came to your show and he was there, you were very, very concerned about how he was going to react to the show. And you mentioned him very nostalgically in the film more than once. So what does he mean to you?
Absolutely,
I mean, he's
nothing.
Not with us anymore, but he seems to me represent something.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can't hold a grudge. I don't know if that's good or that's bad. I don't dwell on the past. Bernie was a very good manager when he managed me. We have a lot of warm moments in the film where I talk about certain funny memories with Bernie. But he dumped me like everybody else dumped me after Fox. Remember, he came to see me 15 years later. And how nice he came to see me when I was doing a one-woman show back in Beverly Hills. Show was very successful, and it was a great night. You're happy to say hello.
Right, right.
Happy to say. And I can't stay. How can I stay angry when things are good again?
I don't know. I'm good at that myself. I stay angry
no,
all the
you
time.
Must, I beg you, Kim, get over it.
Okay, thank
I'm
you.
I'm sorry,
for
it's public radio. Get
I
your
hear my producer
the
in the background saying, hear, hear.
But yeah, get ready, because the attitude is, F them and die. And onwards, 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 onwards. I can't hold a grudge. Too much energy goes out to holding the grudge. I'll go home and write a joke instead.
Okay, great advice. So do you feel, I mean, you've done a lot, as you say, you would perform anywhere, you did the QVC, whatever, well, you know, money, you have a lot of expenses. Was there a way, if you had sort of been a little harder to get, you could be doing the Betty White resurgence, or were you always too naughty to be Betty White?
Oh, I can never be Betty White. Betty White is adorable and wonderful and funny and beloved in everything she does. No, I have always felt my job in life was to say the emperor's not wearing clothes and he's an idiot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's, there was never another was way never. Of doing things. You don't look back and say, I wish I hadn't done this gig because then I would have been able to be that.
It's not a business where you know what that is going to be or that's ever coming at you. I was just talking, Whoopi Goldberg is a friend, and I just did The View, and we were standing outside talking about, because she had just seen the movie, and she had said to me, the part where I show Fear is an open date book with nothing in it.
Which, right, when you have no appointments.
Mm-hmm. And she said to me, she didn't know people weren't returning phone calls. And she finally said, again, I struggled and I called and I found something that led to something. And someone, you know, who the hell knows? Someone in a restaurant sees you and says, she might be good for The View.
Right, it's just a kind of a random thing. But you did want to be an actress, you say, in the film.
Still do.
In the movie, it seems, if you could choose, you'd be
If I could choose, if Meryl Streep would just die.
She would just get out of the way. But so there's,
get
but
out of the way, that dumb bitch. Get out of the way. I could have done Sophie's Choice and with the Jewish accent. It would have been so much more effective.
Right. Except she was Catholic in the movie, of course.
Oh, so.
So what? Oh, so glued to the facts here.
You know, Kim, I'm so bored with people bringing up reality.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But, you know, I guess I don't want to flog that particular horse, but I guess if you'd wanted to be an actress, I mean, would it have been possible? Was there a point where you say, okay, that's the way I should have gone? I should have done that college production of Medea.
I did.
You did.
I was Amelia in Othello, the first Amelia ever with a New York accent.
So basically, comedy is.
I was always funny. My family is funny. My sister was the youngest female lawyer at the time when she graduated, youngest female, and funny. I still say, brilliant as she is, she wins her cases because she. It's funny. You know,
funny,
the judge likes her. The jury likes her. They just like her. My dad was a doctor, and his patients laughed while they were dying. And people to this day said, your dad made my mother so happy at the end. So comedy was always what I did to be popular. And then when I was trying to be an actress, when I'd walk into an office, I'd make the secretaries laugh so they'd remember me. Mm. And then somebody said, you can work as a comedian and make $8 a night, $10 a night. While you're trying to be an actress, and that's how it opened. And I started to write jokes. Mm-hmm. I made a living as a writer first.
And the rest, as they say,
is history.
It's history. So how much do you feel, I mean, you're now sitting in New York. Do you feel that Hollywood has made up a story about you? Or how much is it you're making, and how much is the industry's making, the image of Joan Rivers?
I don't think they've ever bothered to make stories up about me. I think the documentary is such a hit because no one ever thought about me. I'm so under the radar out there. I am such a non-person out there that one of the reasons I did the red carpet is because nobody wanted to do the red carpet when we started doing those things. Nobody wanted to stand up there. And Melissa was working at E! At the time, and they said, Melissa heard them saying, who are we going to go out there and stand in the hot sun and talk to celebrities? And Melissa said, knowing me, my mother will do that. And that's how I got the red carpet. Now, of course, it's become this whole thing. But I've never been invited to the right parties out there, as they say. I've never been put at the right table. Never. I'm absolutely a non-person out there. And I feel it very strongly.
In what way?
I never invited any place, never get the good table, never invited the premiere. The Vanity Fair party. I've never been invited to the Vanity Fair party. My garbage man gets invited to the Vanity Fair party.
I've been invited to the Vanity Fair party. Yeah, I don't make you feel bad.
No. Everyone's in the Vanity Fair. Can't get into them. Not that we want to get in. Screw you. Go to hell. But we've never had the chance to say that to them.
Well, now you did.
Now I just did.
Joan Rivers is an iconic performer, comedian, actress, writer, producer. The documentary documentary Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, which follows a year in her life, is out now in theaters in New York and L.A. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
I enjoyed it. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the executive producer of the show. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or thoughts about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.